theoldorchard.com. Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I'm excellent. I left Washington at 6 a.m. this morning through Atlanta. I was in Tampa by 9:30 a.m. It was awesome.
And you were working out by?
A little later in the afternoon, but I got a lot of radio stuff done that I had to catch up on, and having a chance to talk with our team and debrief with our producers and our tape ops just to get set up for tomorrow. It's been a for those guys, the people behind the scenes, and Mitch, you know this and appreciate this probably as much or more than anybody. We drive a very hard show. Our whole Doc Emmerich's demanding, Eddie's demanding, I'm demanding. So there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes that people aren't even aware of. And good TV is supposed to look easy, and our guys behind the scenes make it look so good, but they're stressed out. They're maxed out every night. And so I just wanted to spend some time with them today in a relaxed atmosphere, and we did, and it was a lot of fun.
You know, actually, I always wanted to I used to live on Tupper Street right near the Forum, and yep. I always wanted to spend the night, but I always had to work the games. I always wanted to spend the night in one of those production trucks that used to be parked out back of the Forum during the playoffs.
Well, if you want to do that, that would be my pleasure to have you join us, and I will make that happen anytime, anywhere you want to go.
Yeah, but it's tight in there. I don't know if
no, it's the R's are big. Like, I'm not kidding around. We have, especially at the Stanley Cup Final, we have 2 and 3 trucks sometimes. So there's more than enough room in there. The new ones, the modern ones, compared to when I started at TSN back in 2000 to where we are now in 2018. The trucks are just completely different. They really are amazing. They're mobile video game centers. That's what they are. They're unbelievable, and they're very airy and very bright. A lot of fun to be in.
I'm going to take you up on that one of these days.
I hope you do.
One of these days. It's just something that interests me.
For you.
Yeah, I'd like to see it from that end. I've never seen it. I'm interested in what I do and everything about what I do and why I got into this, and that's one aspect of it. I've never seen a broadcast produced. Yeah. Live broadcast produced in sports.
It goes so fast, and those the young men and women that work behind the scenes, especially our tape ops, are amazingly quick. And all those packages and replays you see on our show are either built by Eddie or by me, and we're doing that as a play's going on. So it's a very busy show, and those people deserve unbelievable credit because they. It's like a madhouse back there. It really is.
So yesterday, either just before we chatted with you or right after we chatted with you, Rod was mentioning, and of course, Alex Killorn, West Island boy, knows the family well, yeah. That he was kind of due, Rod, and
yeah.
Right on cue.
He's just been a proven playoff performer, Pierre, and I found it hard to believe that Tampa would go this many games without him being a factor, and he certainly was last night.
Well, he was a factor, obviously, in the winning goal, which was great, but where he was really a factor, I thought, the entire game, was ability to skate and check. He's done that the whole series. He's been really, really good at that. I had a great interview with him after the game. He's just such a forthright person and really highly cerebral. The biggest thing about him is he's a big man to begin with, but he can really skate. For a man his size, he can really, really skate. So I was happy for him, obviously. It was a different kind of a game because he gets all the credit for the game-winning goal, but there's no way Tampa wins that game if it's not for Andre Vasilevsky. And I said this to Dave Andrechuk. Mitch, you're probably the only person in the room that is old enough to remember. But in 71, Ken Dryden in the first round against the Boston Bruins, if it's not for Ken Dryden, then there's no 71 Stanley Cup final and Stanley Cup.
Which, by the way, was won in Chicago on this very night in 1971.
So I said to Dave Andrechuk last night, I said, that's Tampa Bay's Ken Dryden moment. That's how great Vasilevsky was in that game last night in Game 4 in Washington. He was spectacular.
Well, it's interesting because we started the show. That's what I mentioned. It's one of these nights you point to. Now, if they don't win the series, we don't remember it. But if they right. win the series and go on to win the Cup, then it's definitely a date and a night, a game that is circled and always remembered.
Yep, and that's the best way to present it. I love how you just said that. That's absolutely true. That would be, if they win the series, that will be the turning point of the series. Obviously, they had to win Game 3, which they did more comfortably than they did Game 4. But Game 4 was won because Andre Vasilevsky went to a completely other level. Like, unbelievable. And people say, well, what about the Kuznetsov 5-hole goal? That's a spectacular player who's having a career playoff year, talking about Kuznetsov, and that's a goal scorer's goal. That's just a great goal. There's no goalie in the world, I think, at this point is going to stop that based on the way Kuznetsov's
You know what? Even if it's not a great goal, it doesn't matter. You make 36 saves, so many high-quality saves. I mean, we're in such a – everybody's quick to jump on everybody. I mean, these are everybody – as Gerard Gallant said yesterday – about holding players accountable. He goes, yeah, they're accountable, but I realize in the course of what's going on the ice, it is an ice surface filled with mistakes. So I'm not going to harp on the mistakes. Everybody is making mistakes.
Well, right now, more than ever in the league, they are. And a big reason why is because the tempo at which the games are being played, we've never had NHL games played at this level of pace, ever. Ever. Listen, I was part of two freaking unbelievable teams, like seriously great teams. Look how many Hall of Famers were on those teams. That being said, we would compete in this era. We would, because we were very fast compared to the rest of the league at that time. But I'm not sure we would be able to handle a lot of the pressure, especially our defense that we're seeing today in the game, and that's where all the mistakes happen. It's off the aggressive forecheck plays and off the aggressive pinches. You know, Mitch, it used to be in, outside of Montreal, where obviously Doug Harvey and Larry Robinson and Jacques Laperriere and Serge Savard, and, you know, you go on and on and on. They were amazing athletes who were big people, bigger than the rest of the league, and they could pinch down and they could jump in the rush and all that. They were really a novelty in the league at that point, outside of Bobby Orr in Boston. But in this league today, I mean, you got guys. Victor Hedman is 6'6", 240 pounds. Think about that.
And what about Sergachev? The fact is, he made two great plays to set up the winning goal.
Yeah, he did, but, you know, I tread lightly on that one, just because I don't want to be perceived as beating people up. But, yeah, Sergachev's very good. That's a trade that won't be won by Montreal.
Unless Jonathan Drouin wins the Art Ross Trophy.
No, that's not happening. I told you last year that I would love to see him just get to 25 goals again.
Right.
I told you that before the season started.
All right. I want to revisit the game, but we've had a discussion. We picked up on the discussion we had about Ryan O'Reilly yesterday. And Gallo is of the – I don't want to speak for you. Go ahead.
Well, earlier in the show, Mitch asks, who have the Canadians had at center in recent memory better than Ryan O'Reilly? And I said, in his prime, in my opinion, and I know it wasn't going to be a popular statement, that I believe Thomas Plekanec was a better player than Ryan O'Reilly in his prime.
I would respectfully disagree. One guy's much bigger than the other. One guy could play a smash-mouth game. Plekanec was probably a better checker. I don't think he had nearly the peripheral vision, but similar. But now the size... O'Reilly's a bigger guy than you think, and he could play in a lot of different situations. Thomas can't play in those situations.
I respectfully disagree. See?
I'm
with you on this. I'd rather have the Ryan O'Reilly, and it's not a put-down of Thomas Plekanec. As I said,
if you had
right now, the Montreal Canadiens could have Ryan O'Reilly right now at 27 and a 27- or 28-year-old Thomas Plekanec, that's fine, right?
That's,
I mean,
yeah.
No?
Yes, I agree. That's what you. If you could have both of them,
that's fine. You're not. You still don't have the true blue dynamic superstar Tavares type, Joe Thornton in his prime type. You still don't have that, but you can get by with those two guys as your 1-2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1A, 1B. That's what you'd have, which would be great. That'd be awesome. But that you don't have that, so that's the problem.
And I made the statement, knowing that most people would disagree with me, but I always trust my gut and. I respect the opinion of both you, Pierre, and Mitch, but when I watch Plekanec, I see a player who I think people in Montreal saw him so much, especially at the end when he wasn't playing as well anymore. I remember him in his prime when he scored 20-plus goals 7 times. He shut down Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin in playoff series. O'Reilly hasn't played in very many playoff series.
I don't know if he shut down Ovechkin. That's not his.
Yeah,
it wasn't his guy to shut down.
That. I remember that series pretty clearly in 2010. I don't remember him ever playing against Ovechkin. His line may have, but he wasn't. That was Jaroslav Spacek.
It was the left side of the ice.
I don't remember him ever playing against him. And in fact, the Canes won that series because of Jaroslav Halak, not because they shut down Ovechkin. And they won that series because they won a game on the road with 14 shots on goal in a game 7. I mean, come on. Let's get serious here.
No, that's fair. And you could take that out of the equation of, I mean, I'm talking about Thomas Plekanec' full career as a Montreal Canadian. Point totals are better than O'Reilly. Goal totals are better than O'Reilly. Played more in the playoffs than O'Reilly. And I don't know a situation that you can't really put Thomas Plekanec in. He played penalty kill, played power play, played in the last minute, can play in the final minute of a period. I don't really see a scenario where Plekanec didn't play when he was with the Canadiens.
That's fair. That's all fair. I agree with all of that stuff.
I'd rather have O'Reilly. Having said
that,
I'd rather have Ryan O'Reilly. Okay, so let's move on. So, what are the chances of let's assume they don't sign Tavares. What are the chances of the Montreal Canadiens filling at least one? Let's stop with one. Get an experienced, proven, productive NHL solid to very good centerman at less than what Ryan O'Reilly makes, which is 7.5. Like, could they get somebody like that under six? Like, which centerman around the NHL who would be slotted one for any team who are experienced? I'm not talking about a young player just starting his career, an experienced, proven guy at less than $6 to $7 million a year.
Derek Brassard.
I'd rather have Ryan O'Reilly.
Do you mean you asked me the question?
Yeah, yeah. No.
Who might be available?
What does he make?
Hate naming names.
No, I know.
He might be available just because Pittsburgh's got guys coming through their pipeline. And, you know, again, I think that was one of those deals where, hey, you're either going to make it for us or you're not. And if you don't, then maybe you're not back. I don't know. I hate.
Okay, so let me do this. What I'm trying to get at, I think, is that people are hoping and some people are praying for John Tavares. Okay. But if you better get used to, you know, somebody is going to come in here and make good money who's not John Tavares playing center for the Montreal Canadiens. It's going to be somebody, right?
Well, yeah, no, it should be. I mean, they need that.
And Jonathan Drouin, what did he sign for? What did Drouin sign for?
Six.
He's six. He's not a proven centerman. So whoever your centerman is...
I heard people on your radio station comparing him to Jean Béliveau. I heard that. I mean, that was said last summer.
No. Who said that?
Yes, it was said. I was there. I heard it.
No, you heard someone who was drinking or something. I don't know.
No, it was said. I'm just telling you.
No, maybe that was in reference to Tony saying he's the best power play guy in the National Hockey League. Maybe that's what...
Tony didn't make that comparison. Tony wouldn't do that.
Okay.
He was an established hockey person.
Okay.
Anyways, we move on.
Yes, go ahead, Gallo.
Well, just as far as names are concerned, I'll go actually to a team. Just I brought it up earlier, Pierre. Carolina has said that everyone's available except Sebastian Aho. And we know that now Rick Dudley is in Carolina.
Yeah.
So there's you see a fit there between Carolina and Montreal making a trade. And what about Jordan Staal?
Do you remember 2 weeks ago when I told you everybody's available there? They basically put everybody to market.
Mm-hmm. Pierre had just got a call from somebody, right? When you spoke
correct.
To us. Yeah.
That is correct. When I talked to you. So everybody's going to market there except for Aho and Jacob Slavin. Those would be the two that would not be, I think, available. Jordan Staal is a very useful player. Jordan Staal is probably going to have a marketplace created by a bunch of teams. Montreal would be wise to get in, but I would say that there'll be a rather large marketplace for him. I just don't know if you have the assets to get him. You know, I just don't know.
So a lot of us have been struggling to figure out whether the Canadiens are going to go with a full-on type of rebuild with young players or go with UFA, spend the money, and try to mix and patch and
no,
get
but they're
in the
not
playoffs.
Going for a full rebuild. We know that,
right?
They're not.
So, and they're going to spend their money, which is the point I've been making several weeks. But I'm curious, Pierre, are you aware of any precedent of a general manager going into year seven who is given the ability to start a full rebuild? As Mark Bergevin is into year seven now, and I can't think of anyone who has been in that position, is retained into year seven, and is allowed to go all young with some pain over 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I'd really have to do some research. That's a great question. It's fair. Just off the top of my head, I couldn't answer it. I wouldn't know. I'd have to really look at it, the numbers, and do some research. But It would be, from afar, it'd be a unique situation. I think this team has to hit the ground running. I really do. The one thing you can't have is you can't have a lethargic fan base. You can't have a fan base that isn't passionate about the team in a really vibrant hockey market. Because if you get there, if you get to that point, you're going to get to the point where it was in the late 1990s, where there are 4,000 and 5,000 seats every night that were available in Montreal. So you cannot have that happen. So if you're a management group, you have to say, how are we going to ensure that this doesn't happen? Now, this discussion should have been had when he got the job. But I told you this a long time ago, and I'm going to say it again. Internally, and I think the world of Jeff Molson, I do. I have utmost respect for him and his family and to Michael Andlauer. They overestimated their team when Mark went in there. I can tell you right now they did because of the conversations I had with them. I said, whoa, wait a second. I'm not sure that you guys are on track here with some of the evaluations of the players. So, you know, I would say the biggest thing is you cannot allow apathy to set into the marketplace. So you better be really aggressive this summer. I think we talked about that before.
I think, yes.
Be a very proactive summer, very proactive.
Apathy is a good word. At the end of the game, we all seem to put probably a little bit too much of an emphasis on body language, right? But at the end of the game, you see Ovechkin smashing his stick.
That feels good. It does. When you're angry.
I understand that. It feels good. I understand that. All right. So I think that's part of the scrum. And some of what we just discussed with Pierre is going to, we'll revisit it on the scrum between 6 and 7. But I was looking at the end of the game. We're going to go out with your conversation with Alex Killorn in a couple of minutes here, Pierre. But am I reading too much into thinking that the series turned last night?
No, I don't think you are at all. But I do think that this is a different Washington team than what we're used to seeing. Here's the one thing that causes caution for me. They've never, and I've done most of their playoff games outside of the Columbus series this playoff year. In fact, I've done all of their playoff games outside of the Columbus series. But I watched that entire series. I have never experienced any negativity around their bench until last night, when Kempney had the spinning backhand blind pass that led to the goal. I can tell you right now, it reminded me of the old Washington Capitals. It reminded me of the backbiting negative Washington Capitals. That's not to say that that will carry forward, because I thought they put on an amazing push. I thought they were valiant. They cared. They competed. They deserved a better fate last night. They did. They desperately deserved a better fate. But it was the first time I can tell you that appeared. That was part of the landscape where guys were like, how could he do that? What the heck is going on? Now, it wasn't that nice, obviously, but that's kind of what they talked about.
Why is Lars Eller taking so many penalties?
Because we talked about this again the other day, too. At some point, you are what you are. He was trying to be Nicholas Backstrom, and he was in Game 6 of the Pittsburgh series, and he was in Games 1 and 2 of the Tampa-Washington series, and then he kind of took a step back in Game 3, and he took a huge step back in Game 4. He's out of gas. This is what I try to explain to people all the time. I've been trying to tell your show for over 20 years, the listeners, this is nothing personal. You are what you are as a player. You can overachieve for a short period of time, but you can't do it over an extended period of time, because once you get in the league, there are very few players that improve exponentially to the point where they become superstars. You either come into the league where, boy, you can see that kid's going to be a star, or he's going to be just a good role player. That's what you are. And Lars is a very useful player. I think I've developed that term over time, right, Mitch, when you got him from St. Louis?
Yep.
That's what I called him. He's a useful player. When you ask a player to go be Nick Backstrom and he's not, that's a hard ask. That's a deep ask. I'm not going to tell you who I talked to on the Capitol staff, but that was their biggest concern, is that he was going to have to overachieve for too long. Now they have Backstrom back, which is good. He's not at 100%.
Well, I was going to ask you, based on what you saw last night, how much does he need to improve, and can he improve based on his physical problem?
I think it's just a pain management thing. I had a player, Shel Samuelson, in the 92 final, who had, I don't want to say the same injury because I don't know the extent of Backstrom's hand, but I can tell you Shel Samuelson's hand was broken, and it was broken in two or three different places. It was a bad break, and he would get shot up every game. And there were some games where it would hit the right place on the shoot-up when they shot him up, and there were other times it wouldn't. But he would bear. It's a pain management thing more than anything else. I don't know how bad Nicky's hand is broken. I'm sure it is because I did the game where he got hurt, and I said it right away. He's in trouble. You could tell. I mean, I heard the noise. It wasn't pretty.